Let's go ahead and jump into Exodus chapter 6. We're working our way through the book of Exodus. If you didn't know, if you haven't been here or you've been asleep for 6 weeks, we're in the book of Exodus. We're going to be in chapter 6 today. We'll cover all of chapter 6 and into chapter 7. We have to take big chunks of Exodus to make it through this book, but we're going to make some headway today. So I am in a season of life where I have three older kids who are all kind of post-teenage years, and then I have a 4.5-year-old. He'll let you know now, 4.5 years old. But I remember those days not too many years ago where my three older ones were all going through their teenage years, and I realized that they were all smarter than me, they thought, right? They're smarter than I am. They know better than I do. They just got it all figured out. And went through that season and then realized that I lived that season when I was a teenager too. There was a time in my life I was a teenager and I was smarter than both of my parents, obviously. And so I went through that season and I had to go through some come to Jesus moments. Anybody ever had a come to Jesus moment with your teenagers or your kids? I'm talking about you're the one giving the come to Jesus moment, not them giving it to you. Tried to give it to me. But we've had those come to Jesus moments. All of us in life, we've been on the receiving end, giving end of the come to Jesus moments. And when we last left Moses, he was having a come to Jesus moment with God. I don't know how all that works out, right? A come to Jesus moment with God. But that's where Moses was. And some might say, rightfully so. If you think about where we're at in the story, Moses has basically put Egypt in his rearview mirror 40 years earlier. He is now married with kids. He's living kind of this blue-collar life as a shepherd on the backside of the desert. And then God shows up. God shows up in a burning bush and informs him that he's going to lead the Hebrews out of Egypt after 400 years of captivity and abuse and neglect and crying out to God. After 400 years, Moses is the guy that's going to bring them out. You ever thought about, like, Moses wishes they had never, like, gone over there and checked out the burning bush? Like, I wish I had just kept going and not paid attention to the burning bush. Matter of fact, I think the text, if you go back and says, after he went over and looked, then God began to talk to him. But that's not where we're at. So Moses is reluctant. He is filled with doubt. He is afraid. He offers, we saw 2 weeks ago, some what some might consider lame excuses, not quite as lame as what we got from Levi this week when we were out in the snow at 9 o'clock at night or whatever. And if you've been to my house, I have like kind of a steep hill that goes down the back and it goes into the woods and it's very dark. And Levi had gone down a couple of little hills with our homemade sled in the neighborhood. And then we decided we're going to go off the steep hill into the dark, and one of the kids went first, and then let me back up in the story. Earlier in the night, Zach taught Levi that eating snow is okay, so he's been eating snow and all that, and so one of the kids went down the steep hill, and I looked at Levi and said, it's your turn. Are you ready? And he said, no, I can't. I'm eating. He like was eating snow. So like his excuse was, no, I'm eating. Okay, he's eating snow. And so that wasn't quite the excuse that Moses gave, wasn't quite that lame. But God responded to Moses' excuses, you remember, not by reminding Moses how awesome Moses is. He didn't build up his self-esteem. He didn't give Moses a pep talk. He didn't give him a self-help book to read or a motivational seminar to attend or a podcast to listen to. No, God reminds Moses who God is. God says, I am Yahweh. I am the great I am. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And you're not going to be flying solo. The sovereign, creator, covenant-keeping God of the universe will be with you through this. And then he confirms the calling of Moses with these miraculous signs. And things are off to a promising start when Moses shares his experience with the leaders of the Hebrew people and tells them what God's purpose and plan is, and they are all excited. Their hopes and dreams are being fulfilled. They are motivated. They respond in belief and worship. They have high expectations. God has heard their cries. He's going to rescue them, like break out the champagne, pack the bags. We are out of here, right? That was kind of their attitude. So with this air of confidence and boldness, Moses and Aaron roll up into Pharaoh's palace and they announce God has spoken. Thus says the Lord. He is setting his people free, we learned last week. Let's get this transition moving, right? Take those champagne boxes and pack them up. Call U-Haul. We are leaving Egypt. But there's a kink in the plan. Pharaoh has a different plan. Matter of fact, he has an opposite plan. Instead of releasing the Israelites, he accuses them of being idle, of being lazy, too much time on their hands to dream this wild dreams. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to cut off your supply chain. I'm going to keep your quota the same. And I'm going to increase your workload so you do not have time to be dreaming these wild dreams. Pharaoh has no intention of participating in their liberation. And why would he? He has an army of slaves that are doing his bidding. They are building his kingdom. Well, we saw last week as harsh reality sets in. Harsh reality sets in for Moses and the Israelites. Things do not appear to be turning out like they had expected and they had hoped for, and disappointment ensues. And not only that, but these Israelite leaders are ticked at Moses, right? They are angry at Moses, who in return is frustrated with God. As a matter of fact, when we left off at the end of chapter 5 last week, Moses is in full-blown Festivus mood. He is airing his grievances with God. That is like the most obscure Seinfeld reference that only a few of you are going to get. He's airing his grievances with God. He is at the end of his rope. That's what we saw at the end of chapter 5, verse 22. Then Moses turned to the Lord and said, "O Lord, why have you done evil to this people? Why did you ever send me?" Right? Like, why did I even go look at the burning bush? "For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all." We said last week, like, if I'm around Moses in this moment, I'm like taking a step back. He's airing his grievances to God. He is questioning everything about God, his goodness, his plan, his calling. Now, let's go ahead and get this out there. If you have not yet, you will most likely go through this type of harsh reality, questioning God moment at some point in your life. You'll be there. You'll go through this. You either have gone through this or you will have moments, time, seasons when you question what you believe about God, what you know about God, his presence, his timing, his goodness, his plan, his purpose, his very nature. Because the harsh realities of life generate these moments. We live in a broken world. We are broken people. And so we will go through these seasons, moments, times, where the harsh reality of life hits us in the face and we begin to question everything we know about faith and God based on the reality of life. Because harsh reality leaves us disappointed, exasperated, frustrated, confused, filled with doubt, perplexed, and even angry at times. And like Moses, our natural instinct is to question God. Why God? Why, if you're so powerful and you're so good, why is my parent still sick? Why is this person dying of cancer? Why is my child going through this? Why do I not have a job, right? Why the why questions of life? Why are my relationships failing? Why do the struggles continue? Like, if you are God and you are powerful and you are good, why is this happening? So how does God respond to Moses? Because how God responds to Moses in this moment teaches us something about who God is. And what we learn is that God gives Moses more of the same. He doesn't explain himself. There's no PowerPoint for Moses on why this is happening. God simply reminds Moses who God is, who he is. Look at chapter 6, verse 1. "But the Lord said to Moses," okay? Moses is airing his grievances, questioning everything about God. Here's how God responds to Moses. "Now," key word there, "now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand he will send them out, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land." Important word, now. Now is the right time for God to demonstrate his power. Did you know God's now is usually different than my now? That God's now looks different? You know why? Because my now is normally based on my desire to avoid the very moments of life that we're talking about. My now is often driven by trying to avoid disappointment, avoid the harsh realities of life. My now is often driven by me trying to get away from those things or out of those things. And we've learned that those are the very moments of life that God uses to teach us about who He is and who we are. And so His now looks a little very different than my now. And basically, God says to Moses, "Moses, we have seen what you can do, and now it is time to see what I can do." And based on what God can do, God says, based on what I can do, Pharaoh will literally be begging the Israelites to leave Egypt. And that's a reality that we'll see as we get to that point in the text in a few weeks. So God takes Moses back to kind of these three important truths that we've seen throughout the Exodus narrative so far. He's like, let's run this back again, Moses, because you haven't gotten it yet. So verse 2, God spoke to Moses and said to him, "I am the Lord. I am Yahweh. I am God. I am the one and only Creator God." So let's run this back again, Moses, and remember, He is God. He's God. By the way, that is a great place to start in our moments of doubt, in the harsh realities of life. A great place to start in our conversation with God is, "You are God, and I am not. You're God." That puts everything in perspective. And we only have to just kind of look around to begin to recognize what that means. I mean, for crying out loud, did we see the snow this week? Like, to be reminded of the beauty of God's creation through something just as simple as snow, like that God is in charge of the world, that He is sovereign creator, God over the things that are around us that we take so for granted, that the most complex things about the human body and human creation, that God merely spoke those things into existence. He is God. He is God. Moses, not going to give you a pep talk. There's no presentation on why this is happening. What you need to remember, first and foremost, is I am God. I owe you no explanation. I am God and you are not. He continues, verse 3, "I appear to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob as God Almighty, but by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they lived as sojourners." So God says, first, Moses, remember, I am God. Second, remember, I keep my promises. God keeps His promises. He gives Moses a little history lesson. And what He's saying is, Moses, I've been writing this story long before you existed. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the God of covenant promises. I control all of human history, and I've been writing a story. That's why we say that history is His story. It's the story of God's redemption. That's a great place to continue our conversation with God in these moments, right? You are God, and you are a God who keeps your promises. See how these things put things in perspective for us as we wrestle with the harsh realities of life? He is God, and He is a God who keeps His promises. Notice what else God says to Moses, verse 5. "Moreover, I have heard the groaning of the people of Israel, whom the Egyptians hold as slaves, and I have remembered my covenant." God says, I'm God, I keep my promises, and don't forget, I know what you're going through. I have heard the pain. God knows what we are facing. He knows what we are going through. He is the God of the present. He is not removed. He is seeing, He is listening, and He is acting. So we kind of see a pattern here for us. As we wrestle with the harsh realities of life, as we're having this conversation with God, to be reminded He is God, He keeps His promises, and He knows what we are going through. That He is not removed from us, that He is not aloof, but He is involved and He sees and hears and acts. So God says to Moses, remember who I am. Pharaoh's response, Pharaoh's initial response double the workload, right? Cut off the supply chain. They're not going anywhere. Pharaoh's initial response does not change who God is. God is saying to Moses, I control Pharaoh's heart. You're focused on Pharaoh, the problem, when you should be focused on me, the solution. Your eyes are on Pharaoh, the problem, and not God, the solution. Does that sound familiar to anyone else? That we get so focused on the problems of life that we forget to set our gaze on the solution. Only focused on what is right in front of me when God is writing a story that is bigger than me. As a matter of fact, the problems exist to get our eyes on God and off of us or the problem. The reason the problem is even there, the harsh reality is there, is to get our eyes off of us, our limits, what we can do in life, and to get our gaze on the controller, to get our gaze on the creator, the sovereign creator, Yahweh God, covenant-keeping, promise-keeping God of history, present, past, and future, to get our eyes on God. So, armed with this reminder, Moses returns to the people with these ideas. God is God. God is faithful to his promises, and God has heard your cries. Let's pick up. We're going to come back to these verses at the very end of the message, but notice as we kind of walk through verses 6 through 8, I want to point out the I will statements here of God. So pay attention to the I will promises of God here. Verse 6, so therefore, to the people of Israel, I say to the people of Israel, I am the Lord, here we go, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will deliver you from slavery to them. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and great acts of judgment. I will take you to be my people. I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God who has brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. Verse 8, I will bring you into the land that I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. I will give it to you for a possession. I am the Lord. So these bookends of who God is with these I will promises. Based on who God is, I am the Lord. Based on who he is, based on his covenant promises, God will set them free from slavery, redeem them. They will become his people. He will be their God. They will know this God has delivered them, God says. By the way, the goal is always to know God. It's always relational to know who God is. So God says, remind the people who I am. I am the God of the past, present, and future, and I'm in control of this thing, and I will do all of these things for them. So that's what Moses does. He goes and tells the people what God has said, all these I will promises. Verse 9, look at their response. Moses spoke thus to the people of Israel, but they did not listen to Moses. And here, look at the explanation why. Because of their broken spirit and harsh slavery. The people refused to listen. We will not be fooled again. And the driving force of their lack of belief is a broken spirit and harsh slavery. Here's what I know. Our present reality impacts our view of God. What we're going through, our present reality impacts our view of God. Think about these two things. A broken spirit. A broken spirit will cause you to lose hope, to lose sight of who God is. All of us have faced the brokenness of life at different times. For some of you, life has broken you. You've been broken by life. You've been broken by destructive people. You've been broken by hurtful experiences. You've been broken by shattered dreams or unfulfilled hopes or unmet expectations. Life will break you, and it will cause you to lose sight of who God is, because you're unable to trust, to rest in who He is. You know why? Because you've been broken by life. You've put hope and faith and trust in people, and they've let you down. You've banked on things that have not turned out like you expected. You've had relationships broken. You have people that have lied to you or hurt you or abused you, and it's left you broken and therefore unable to really fully know God and be known by God. The Israelites, Moses, we can't trust because our spirit has been broken. And deep brokenness often comes from harsh bondage, right? 400 years of slavery. All of their hopes and dreams and expectations are now at this moment like God has finally heard. He's going to deliver. He's going to set us free. And all of that comes crashing down in a moment's time, and their bondage goes even deeper than they knew before. Harsh bondage will keep you from seeing and knowing God. And some of you are being or have been held captive to something or someone that keeps you from seeing and knowing God. And this looks so different. It could be an addiction. It can be pride. It can be an obsession with something. It could be greed or materialism or substance abuse or anything. It can be someone else's control over my life. It could be bitterness. It could be unforgiveness, the inability to forgive someone who has hurt me. Like, all of these things can hold us captive, hold us in bondage, unable to trust. Bondage dismantles faith. So think about it. End of chapter 4. Here's the hope, the dream, the promises. The people believe God. They worship God. By the time we get to chapter 6, verse 9, they will not even listen, because a broken spirit and harsh bondage closes our spiritual eyes and ears. Optimism is diminished by suffering. Hope is destroyed by hardship. And if we're being honest, I understand their hesitancy. We've already been down this path, and it did not work out so well. Our spirit is broken. Our slavery is harsh. Why would we risk the shattered dream again? How does God respond? Again, God does not try and convince them to believe. Verse 10. So the Lord said to Moses, "Go in, tell Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, to let the people of Israel go out of his land." But Moses said to the Lord, "Behold, the people of Israel have not listened to me. How then shall Pharaoh listen to me? For I am of uncircumcised lips." But the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron and gave them a charge about the people of Israel and about Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the people out of the land of Egypt. So again, we're right back there. God basically says, "Pony up, Moses. Go back to Pharaoh and tell him again who I am and what is going to happen." Moses says, "God, my own people won't listen to me. Why would Pharaoh listen?" Moses is still unable to see past his own inabilities. And God basically says, "Remember who I am and go do what I said." And then starting in verse 14, we have this kind of commercial break, which is popular in ancient writings. Verses 14 through 25, we're not going to read them, is basically the genealogy of Moses and Aaron. So in the middle of all this, the writer says, "Stop. Let me tell you where these guys came from." Verses 26 and 27 of chapter 6 kind of give us an explanation why the commercial break is there. "These are the Aaron and Moses to whom the Lord said, 'Bring out the people of Israel from the land of Egypt by their host.' It was they who spoke to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, about bringing out the people of Israel from Egypt, this Moses and this Aaron." So these verses kind of tell us why these verses are here. In essence, the purpose of this genealogical break is to establish the pedigree of Moses and Aaron. And he traces it back through the lineage of Levi, who is the priestly tribe of the 12 tribes of Israel. So without taking time to dissect this section, just know that God is drawing attention here to his covenant faithfulness back through the generations to again set the stage for the next Pharaoh encounter. So let's bounce to verse 28. On the day when the Lord spoke to Moses in the land of Egypt, the Lord said to Moses, I am the Lord. Tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I say to you. But Moses said to the Lord, behold, I am of uncircumcised lips. How will Pharaoh listen to me? Same song on repeat. You ever have that song not through the week? I just need to hear this song over and over again. So it's like push repeat on whatever device you're listening to. Same song on repeat again and again. God says, I'm bringing my people out. Go tell Pharaoh. Pharaoh says, Moses says, I'm not capable. He will not listen. Over and over again, the idols of Moses' heart are being exposed and torn down by God. Same for me. Over and over and over and over again, as I leave life, as I make excuses before God, as I pursue my own agenda in life, God brings me back again and again to who he is. Remember who I am, Devin. As you live life with every excuse and every I can't and every I'm going this direction instead of this direction, remember who I am again and again and again. The song of God on repeat in my own heart and soul as he breaks down the idols of my sinful heart and exposes me to who he is again and again and again. We are Moses. Here's what God's saying. Moses, you're not the main character in this story. This story is not about Moses. This story is about God. God says to Moses, you do not have to be creative. You do not have to be the most gifted orator. You do not have to be a high-capacity leader. All you need to do is say what I tell you to say, because this is God's story. It's not the story of Moses. Just say what I tell you to say. I didn't call you because you're the most qualified. You're a shepherd on the backside of the desert. I didn't call you because you have the best leadership gifts. I didn't call you because you're the most articulate. I called you so that people will know the stories about God and not about Moses. 7, verse 1. The Lord said to Moses, see, I have made you, interesting phrase here, see, I have made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet. You shall speak all that I command you, and your brother Aaron shall tell Pharaoh to let the people of Israel go out of the land. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart. We talked about that a few weeks ago. If you didn't hear that message, you can go back and listen to what God is saying in that phrase. I will harden the heart of Pharaoh. And though I multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt, Pharaoh will not listen to you. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt and bring my host, my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great acts of judgment. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring out the people of Israel from among them. Again, God says to Moses, here's how it's going to go down. In case you forgot the first 24 times I told you, here's another preview of the coming attractions. I say yes, Pharaoh says no. I'll work miracles, Pharaoh will not listen. I'll bring my judgment down on Egypt. And Pharaoh will eventually realize who's in charge. Hint, it's not Pharaoh. It's God. And then, God says, Pharaoh will drive my people out of Egypt. Again, part of the reason of God hardening the heart of Pharaoh is so that the whole world, so that Pharaoh, Egypt, and really the whole world will know who God is. That God is in such control as the potter over the clay, that even in the hardening of Pharaoh's heart is an announcement to the world of how big and sovereign he is. So, seems like a little transition here as we get to verse 6. Moses and Aaron did so. They did just as the Lord commanded them. By the way, verse 7, Now Moses was 80 years old, and Aaron 83 years old when they spoke to Pharaoh. This time, after this journey we've been on for 6-plus chapters, this time Moses and Aaron do exactly what God says. It's beginning to sink in. By the way, 80 and 83. They're getting the senior citizens discount at McDonald's, okay? A-A-R-P-Q-X-Y-something. They're there, right? I started getting some of those things in the mail. Do what? I'm not applying for this. I don't care how old I am. 80 and 83 years old, and it's beginning to sink in. Following Jesus is a lifelong journey, right? Can I get an amen? It is why we have to remind ourselves of who God is over and over and over and over again. And hopefully by the time we get to 80, we can be like, I think I'm starting to get it. A couple of important reminders from this section before we end today. Reminder one, assess life situations. Assess the situations of life, the circumstances of life, through the lens, through the perspective of who God is and what God has done. We have to assess the harsh realities, the circumstances, the situations of life. We have to assess what is going on in our lives through the lens of who God is and what He has done. God constantly reminds Moses of his past activities, of the covenant promises he has made to with previous generations centuries earlier. I mean, Abraham was not the grandfather of Moses. We're talking about centuries of time. And constantly God is calling Moses back to remember. Remember the promises I made centuries before now. Interesting enough, the Exodus event will become one of the primary reference points for future generations, right? Right now, God is saying to Moses, remember Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You know what's going to happen through this? When you get deeper into the Old Testament and New Testament, you know what the point of reference is going to be? Remember the God who brought Israel out of Egypt, who parted the Red Sea? That's the God I'm talking about. God's writing a story. A bigger story than Moses can see, that future generations will see. He is the God who has been writing a story throughout the chronicles of history, which gives us confidence and hope in our current situation and in our future. We tend to focus on our current circumstances, and we lose sight of who God is and what God has done. We face harsh realities. And if you're like me, what I want are quick answers. What I want is simple solutions. I want a PowerPoint presentation that explains why. I want to Google it or figure it out or solve it or get it behind me so I can move on. And what I am provided is an invitation to remember who God is. So whatever circumstances or situation you're facing, God invites you in this moment to remember who He is and what He has done. And the reason this is important is because when we begin to grasp how big God is and how God has been writing this redemptive story since the creation of the world, then the harsh realities of life begin to take their proper perspective in life. That God is bigger than whatever it is you're facing. And He has proven Himself faithful again and again and again, centuries before I was a thought. You ever notice that God tends to offer what I would call proof by fulfillment? In other words, in this moment, you may not be able to see or understand what God is doing, but one day you will. One day you will. One day you'll look back and see how God was at work. The proof doesn't happen in the moment. the proof happens in the fulfillment when I'm looking back on what God has done. He was faithful to his promises, even when I couldn't see it or realize it in the moment, that I can look back and see what God was doing, that he was faithful. When I was confused, he was being faithful. When I was angry, he was being faithful. When I couldn't figure it out, he was being faithful. And I can't even see that till I'm beyond it, looking back on it. We live in this tension of promises that have already been fulfilled in the gospel and promises that have not yet been fulfilled. Already fulfilled, not yet fulfilled. Already I know I've been called, I've been redeemed, I've been saved, I've been justified by God. But there's a whole bunch of not yet promises in the Bible that I haven't taken hold of yet. I've not yet reached the promises of all tears will be removed, that there'll be no more pain and no more sorrow. I haven't gotten there yet. So we live in this tension of the already fulfilled promises of God and the not yet fulfilled promises of God. And as we live in this tension, God invites us to exercise faith and obedience, trusting that he is sovereign and that he is good, and he is writing a story that ends with the final and complete redemption of his people. So what we do in the meantime is we assess our life situations through the lens of who God is and what God has done. I want to tell you, a broken spirit and the harsh captivity of life will keep you from seeing that, won't it? And so we're invited in those moments. Remember who I am. Remember what I've done. Remember that I have been faithful when you were unfaithful. Assess life situations through the lens of who God is. I also say from this section, we are reminded, as we have been so many times, that we follow the right example. Our example to follow is not Moses. Like in these moments, we see this so clearly. In this first section of Exodus, and we kind of make a transition here starting next week, is when Moses is before Pharaoh and the plagues happen and all those things that we like to read about and the stories that make the kids' books. And Levi, we've watched The Prince of Egypt again through the Moses series, and watching that, it's like the fascinating things of the plagues and things like that. And that's kind of the next section of Exodus. In this first section, Moses is a complex figure, isn't he? Like, he is like the chosen deliverer, but he's also a refugee from justice. He's a skeptic. He murdered someone. He's a reluctant recipient of God's plan. Like most biblical characters, Moses is neither a perfect moral example for us to follow or emulate, neither is he this complete renegade that we should shun. Moses is human. He's us, right? We are never instructed a single time in Scripture to be like Moses in his finest moments. Nor are we directed to not be like Moses when he is arguing with God. We're never told to be or not be like Moses. We're just told the story. You know why? Because the central character in the story is not Moses, it's God. The life and story of Moses fits in this bigger framework of God's redemptive story. Like every biblical character, Moses provides us teachable moments that help shape our faith, but we are never instructed to emulate Moses. Moses is not the author and finisher of my faith. Moses is an inadequate deliverer, and he teaches and challenges and encourages me in my faith journey, but most importantly, he points beyond himself to a true deliverer and ultimate rescuer, the one who is the author and finisher of our faith. God informs Moses, you'll be viewed as God to Pharaoh, and Moses, listen, is only a representative of God to Pharaoh. Just like us, that we represent God to the world in which we live. Just like Moses, with all of our flaws and our brokenness, we point beyond us to a true deliverer, a true rescuer. And yet, as flawed humans, as broken people, we still represent God in the world in which we live. So God says to Moses, you will be as God to Pharaoh, but he's not God. You know what? He's a representative of God. But here's the gospel. There is coming a rescuer who not only represented God, but who is God. Paul says in Colossians that Jesus is the true image of the invisible God. That in every area that Moses fell short, Jesus was faithful. That Jesus is God. And we learn to know him. As we learn to know him, that we become more like Jesus and less like Moses, less like us. Because Jesus is the greater Moses. As humans, we tend to follow the pattern of Moses rather than Jesus. We doubt who we are. We question who God is. We focus on our problems and not the one who is bigger than our circumstances. And yet, as followers of Jesus, the New Testament teaches we have been born again. We have been recreated. We have been made new in Christ. And so as restored image bearers of God, we are equipped and enabled to live out God's purposes for our lives. And so as we live in the here and now, we seek to live out our faith in a way that represents God. In each life situation, we are God's representatives to the people in our path. So, how am I representing God? How am I representing God at home with my wife and my kids? How am I representing God at school? How am I representing God at work? How am I representing God at the grocery store when the line is backed up? There's one cashier with 42 people waiting. How am I representing God while I drive and while I talk and while I interact and when I post on Facebook and social media? How am I representing God to the people in my path? Flawed? Yes. Failed deliverer? Absolutely. But how am I representing God? Which brings us to kind of the final direction I want to go. And why we say this over and over and over again at City Church. When we ask ourselves, how am I representing God at home, school, work, all these places, we have to remind ourselves who God is. And that's why we say over and over that our call is to preach the gospel to ourselves every day. To preach the gospel to ourselves. To remind us who God is. In this passage, we are invited to remember who God is. That God keeps his promises. He hears our cries. He understands our pain. He sets us free. He redeems us. He brings us close to himself. He leads us home. He is the God of the past, present, and future. And we must constantly remind ourselves of these gospel truths. Let me show you how that works out in a text like this. Let's just go back quickly to the four I will statements in verses 6 through 8 of chapter 6. Remember the four I will statements? Look how these are gospel statements at a core. So there, say therefore, this is God again to Moses, say therefore to the people of Israel, I am the Lord, so there's our bookend, who God is, I am the Lord, and, listen to them, I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will bring you out, right? And I will deliver you from slavery to them. Do you recognize this language? I will bring you out. I will deliver you. When we get into the New Testament, the gospel idea here is the idea of liberation, that we have been set free. Paul says, you have been set free from your sin. You have been set free from the bondage of slavery. That as a follower of Jesus, I am free from sin and I am free to live for him. That's why I remind myself of the gospel truth as I'm reading this text. I've been set free, right? I've been liberated. I've been delivered from sin. Sin does not hold me captive. Satan has no voice in my life. I've been set free from that. I am liberated. And God has been speaking that promise for generations, all the way back to Moses. I will set my people free. And we have been liberated. So you have to speak that truth to yourself. You have to remind yourself, I have been liberated by the gospel of Jesus. What else does he say here? And I will do what? I will redeem you. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm. We don't have time to get into this. Outstretched arm and acts of judgment that God is stretching out his arm. He's reaching for you. He says, I will redeem you. The New Testament gospel idea here is redemption, that I have been redeemed by God. Man, there is so much depth in that idea of redemption. You start in the Old Testament and read about the kinsman redeemer and how God assigned people to redeem those who were slaved or who were isolated or had been left without a spouse, that God appointed and called a kinsman redeemer to step in, which was pointing ahead to Jesus, the kinsman redeemer. And then we get into the New Testament and realize the idea of redemption is to purchase, to buy back. Story of Hosea, this runs deep throughout the scripture story. And it starts here in Moses. And God says, I'm redeeming a people. I've been redeemed by Jesus. I have been redeemed. I am a redeemed child of God. Verse 7, the I will. God says, I will take you to be my people. I will be your God. You shall know that I am the Lord your God who has brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. God says, I will take you as my people. The gospel New Testament idea here is I have been adopted by the Father, that I am a child of the King. Remember a couple weeks ago we talked about how God identifies Israel as his firstborn son. Man, take that concept in throughout all of Scripture. But we are told again and again in the New Testament, you are sons and daughters of a king. You have been adopted. You have been given the rights that Jesus has because you are an heir that has been adopted by the Father. And so when Moses speaks to Moses and says, I am redeeming a people that I will call, right, that I will take as my people, he is pointing forward to Jesus who will provide ultimate adoption. That we are children of God. What a gospel idea. I remind myself I am a child of the King. One more. Verse 8. I will bring you out to the land, right? Here's the promise. I will bring you into the land that I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. I will give it to you for a possession. And then there's our bookend again. I am the Lord. Based on who God is, God says, I'll bring you out. This gospel New Testament idea is that there is an inheritance waiting for the children of God, that there is a land beyond this, that the promises will be fulfilled of no more pain, no more sorrow, no more sickness, that there is an inheritance waiting for the sons and daughters of the King, that I am his, and because I am his, I have been brought into a spiritual eternal kingdom, that I am an heir, right? There's an inheritance, an eternal inheritance awaiting me because I am a son of a king. You have to remind yourself of the gospel again and again and again as we face the harsh realities of life, to assess life situations based on who God is, what God has done. We keep our eyes on the author and finisher of our faith, not Moses, the author and finisher of our faith, and we remind ourselves again and again of gospel truth. I've been set free from sin. I've been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. I am a child of the King. I am his. So be encouraged, follower of Jesus. Each and every day, remind yourself God is in control. He keeps his promises. He liberates and redeems and adopts sinners. And he gives us a spiritual inheritance. I like how Peter says it. You are an object of his mercy. You're an object of his mercy. And with this confidence in who Jesus is, in who God is, on what God has done and is doing and will do, with this confidence, we are able to face the harsh realities of life.